No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Here we go. Welcome in hour two of Old School on The Ticket. I'm Austin. He's Jay. Glad you're with us. 402-464-5685. Let us know. Are you taking the week off before Thanksgiving? Got to go back next week. 402-464-5685. We know you're a turkey person on Thanksgiving. Go get it out in Mercado. All your other meats and accessories for your meats as well. 3 Lincoln locations and 1 up in Omaha. Make sure you get some stock up for the weekend. Should be a fun one in college football. And Jay, really the headlining game, probably the most to do when it comes to the college football playoff and even a little bit the Big Ten race and how we perceive some of those teams at the top. Oregon and USC should be in the Pac-10, should be in the Pac-12. Yeah. But man, this is, again, do or die for USC. And sneaky, could be do or die for Oregon as well.
Yeah, you got two teams trying to fight to stay alive, but with different kind of external circumstances. USC to really validate that they're actually back as a national, you know, power or, you know, respectful nationally, and obviously be alive for the Big Ten needs them to, you know, stay alive for the college football playoffs. And Oregon is probably because of the schedule and lack of sexiness coming down the pipe. And so Oregon only has one loss. USC has two. You know, most likely if they lose a third, you won't be able to get in. Oregon might have a slight chance, but needs some help, right? But the Big Ten needs. And, you know, and so if I'm the Big Ten eyes, you know, there in Chicago, you know, obviously, you're going back and forth. Do we need Oregon to stay alive? Do we really need USC? Or is there a way we can get both? But the only way you're going to get both is USC wins. And there's a lot of pressure. Lincoln Riley has I think he has a little bit less pressure than he had at the beginning of the season. You know, because they play a different, you know, he's telling you, hey, look, we're trying to be more physical, and we are. You know, defensively is still, you know, a little bit lacking, but for the most part, they've done their thing.
Here's the thing though, even defensively though, USC's 37th in defensive SP plus. So no, it's not great. And again, the top 20 offenses they faced, to hold two of them, Illinois and Notre Dame, really shredded them. 34 points per game, 72 yards per play. Oregon's number 10 offense, an SP plus in the country. But still, 37th in defense? What have we said for years? Just be okay. Be good enough defensively.
And that's that whole thing. It's like once you see improvement, but now we need more, right? Yeah. They're fighting the same things that everybody else is, you know, as far as when they do improve. So it's a big game. I mean, Oregon's offense when rolling with Dante Moore is pretty tough. But I think it's up to USC to find a game plan that they're going to try to confuse them. Now, this is the third time. Now, you struck out twice. Notre Dame has a young quarterback. Obviously, Illinois' quarterback is very, very good in Altmyer. But then now you got another young quarterback in Dante Moore. You got to find a way to slow him down and that offense down. You know, because if you don't, Doesn't matter what that USC offense does, Oregon will win this game.
This is from ESPN's preview of this game. In the past five games with his receiving corps struggling through injuries, Dante Moore's total quarterback rating has been under 42 three times and over 91 twice. But the Ducks are second nationally in both rushing success rate and yards per carry, and they have seemingly endless depth at running back. Four running backs have rushed at least 42 times, and three of them average at least 7 yards per carry. Teams can make stops if they force Moore to consistently make plays on passing downs, but it's hard to guarantee that USC will ever knock the Ducks off schedule. USC's rushing defense, 126th in rushing success rate allowed, 103rd in stuff rate, which is a run stop or behind the line of scrimmage. For an Oregon team, Jay, that you still think of as, you know, flash, pizzazz, chuck it around, you know, style points, but this is more of a gritty, grimy kind of blue collar Oregon
team. It has to be because they don't have the quarterback, even though Dante Moore is a high NFL prospect. But Bo Nix has been in college, it seems like, forever. And obviously, you had Johnson, the receiver, and you had Stewart and Ferguson, I think, the tight end. So they had
NFL. Sadiq is still there,
But still, they had top-notch NFL talent, and they had continuity. This is Dante Moore's first time, leading the team. And so they've had to kind of reshape their offense. And then obviously I think he's taken off, right? And obviously you've seen when he gets going, and obviously when they're healthy, I mean, you see why all the hype was, you know, around him. But on the flip side, Oregon has a really good looking football team. You know what I'm saying? Defensively. I'm not impressed with them defensively, even though they're a good-looking football team. I think
even though the numbers tell you they're pretty good?
Even the numbers tell me that they're pretty good. Now, granted, I'm going off of the way Penn State last year was able to move the ball almost score for score with them until they were able to double up on them late in the game, right? I'm looking at them at times, you know, when I watched them, I was able to watch the coaches' tape when they played Northwestern. Northwestern was able to do some things, but then Stone did what Stone does and played keep away for two straight possessions. That's where I'm looking at it. So it's maybe a little bit of bias. Their numbers are good. And they got a ton of talent. You would just expect when they roll out there, if you watch this game tomorrow, you roll out there and they can rotate, you know, eight guys on the defensive line and two really good. It was a number 10 and then number 44 defensive end. You know, pretty good looking dudes. They got number one in the middle, and I think number 28.
Boker,
And then they got Jackson, who's an Omaha kid linebacker, and 28. I mean, they're rolling out there with some dudes, 54, 26. They're rolling out with some good looking dudes, and it's like, you know, you need to take that step, you know, to where you can be a dominating defense, and they got the work cut out for them tomorrow.
Yeah.
Even though they're at home, they have their work cut out for them.
USC number two offense in yards per play offensively, Oregon third defensively in yards per play, USC fifth in points per drive offensively, Oregon's defense is ninth. Success rate, USC's offense is fourth, USC's or Oregon's defense is 18th. This is still a top five, top three offense in the country for USC.
Yeah. And quietly, and it's differently. Yeah. It's different. Third team running back, do your thing. Third team walk on running back.
Cooking.
Counter left, counter right, and killing folks. And he seems like he's getting better.
Yeah.
And that's not normally what you think with Lincoln Riley. Now, I think Lincoln Riley always runs the ball a lot more than people give him credit for, but he's never had to run. I wouldn't say never, but most of the time he has his starter or high-ranking backup. But he has the third-string running back that was a walk-on and the five-star running back that can't get any carries behind him. And then obviously you got Lemon, who's been very, very good. And then obviously Jade Maeva looked horrible against Nebraska, but he's been pretty good after that. So I think it's going to come down to whatever the best of each team wins. USC's offense against Oregon's defense. If USC's offense does better than Oregon's offense against USC's defense, USC wins. So it's going to come down to how well Oregon's defense plays and can – and I was thinking about this, Austin. I want your opinion. Is it going to be keeping USC away from explosive plays or not letting USC just kind of, you know, that one drive against Nebraska where they just kind of just beat you up, right? And consistently, you know, 8 yards here, 14 here, quick pass here. And then, you know, where they kind of like a death by a thousand paper cuts on the road, and then obviously you're the home team.
Let me go to this stat maybe. the Ducks at Oregon have yet to give up more than 5.3 yards per play in any game. USC has yet to average less than 5.5. I don't think USC can survive offensively if it's run for two, hope Mayava makes something happen.
No, not against these athletes.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I think it's better for USC if they can stay on schedule. Yeah. You have a guy like Lemon who can be the game breaker, but let's say you throw him that quick hitch. You throw him a screen of some sort. If you get 4 to 7 yards off of that and you're on schedule, that's fine because you're going to give him chances to break it open and turn that into an explosive play. This can't be an all or nothing game for USC offensively. So I think for Oregon, stopping that run first and second down, making Mayava beat you, he's good, but he's human, right? Yeah. I do think that Lanning's a good enough coach and that defensive staff is good enough that with that talent, if they can win first and second down, you know, like any team, really, they'll feel better about their chances. USC is explosive and can overcome some of that. But, man, I just think Oregon's a little bit too well-rounded for me. It's probably maybe not as high a scoring game as some people might think it's going to be, at least in my head. I could see, you know, upper 20s, maybe not into the high 30s or low 40s. But, Jay, let me ask you this then. I am not in the camp that the Big Ten gets four teams into the playoff.
No.
I think three.
Well, this is the elimination game.
It is. Another one.
Yeah.
Is it better for the Big Ten if last year's one seed, your big national newcomer, Brandon, Oregon, continues to make the playoff? Or is it better for the Big Ten if one of your historical brands, USC, reestablishes itself and makes the playoff?
I think it's better if USC does. I think because Big Ten needs, because you always expect, like, Oregon would be odds on favorite to make it next year.
Yeah.
Right? Dante Moore comes back, so forth and so on. Yeah. USC needs it. And the Big Ten needs it. Now, they might not like it. It'd be interesting. I don't know which team would go farther. I'd probably lean on to Dan Lanning just because he's been there before.
We have to start talking matchups now in the college football playoffs as well.
I'm just saying who can travel, right?
Yeah, sure, you know, sure. Right? Portable.
Portable. But more importantly, after this game, whoever wins this game, you have to hold serve the rest of the season.
Yeah.
You cannot have a mishap. Mm-hmm. And you
luckily I got one chance left.
Right.
But that one can really kill you.
But that's where it's more pressure packed. It's like you got over the hump, right? You kind of, you know, a sigh of relief. And then, oh, we got another team that's coming to knock us off. So you cannot afford, you know, to have your guard down after this.
I tend to agree that I think in the long term, it's probably better for the Big Ten, especially if this is going to be the conference that pushes for a 2014 playoff and four auto bids for itself.
Yeah.
If Oregon wins, I think the benefit of that is, hey, look, they have staying power. They're not the soft pushover program that they can't compete anymore. They've established themselves in the Big Ten. It's not just, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. Oregon is here. They're a player in the Big Ten. They're not just sizzle. There's stake there as well. But if the Big Ten wants to continue to push its preferred model of more automatic qualifiers from each conference, that's where you want the depth. Hey, look at all these good teams that we have sent to the playoff before. This is why we need more automatic berths, because we have so many teams that any given year could be playoff quality.
Yeah, because when you think about it, if USC loses, Oregon wins, Oregon ends up like tricking it off against Washington the last week of the season. Mm-hmm. Now your attention goes to Michigan.
Gross.
Against Ohio State.
Yeah.
Which last year was a fluke. You're going to get the boat race this year. So for the Big Ten, you need USC to be able to do it. And plus, because USC plays UCLA the last week of the season. Mm-hmm. Very favorable matchup for USC Trojans. So this is why this game right here is an elimination game. Obviously, they've been in elimination game mode since they played here at Nebraska. And so it gives them a little bit of a on-the-job training of championship mindset.
Does that help a team, or does that wear on a team by the end of a month like this?
I think it helps you. I think it helps you because if you have the right mindset and have it as a goal, it's like, okay, this is it. This is the last one. Not that UCLA is going to be a pushover. They're like, oh, yeah, this is it. We're on the road. We need to be hyper-focused. Mm. This has got to have your attention. It's great that we got here. Now let's not fumble and fumble the opportunity now that we're here. Mm-hmm. Like, we came this far. Let's get the job done.
Couple other interesting games in college football. Jay, do you want Big 12 or SEC game first?
SEC.
Oklahoma hosting
Missouri.
Obviously, both these teams have their own quarterback issues. Missouri's starter, Bo Prebbio, obviously down for the year, and then Mateer is back for Oklahoma. Number 22 at number 8. This is another one, Jay. This not a pushover, but for Oklahoma,
you got to hold serve.
You got to hold serve.
And it's hard to hold serve against the Mizzou Tigers with that defensive line.
That running back.
And that running back. Mm-hmm. So that means that what is that going to do? Lessen your chances, mm-hmm. condense the game. And Mateer is really good as far as being able to create things off schedule. That Missouri defensive line ain't letting you get off schedule.
Ooh.
So it's going to, and then also it's the maturity, right? You just won down at Bama. Mm-hmm. And you back? Can you validate
with the fewest yards in what, like a top 10 win of any team, like the 2000s or something like that?
You have to validate it.
Yeah,
that's why it's about the process and understanding the standard on how you win. You can't. Yes, you can be happy that you won and celebrate that, mm-hmm. but you also can focus on how they won, which obviously, I wouldn't say it was luck, but obviously, it's never happened before.
Yeah.
So you can't think you have everything solved, and here comes a Missouri that's essentially playing for the best bowl game they can get. You know, moving forward with their, you know, all everything running back and second, third team quarterback.
Oklahoma favored by 7.5 in this one. SP Plus says it's Oklahoma by 5. Football Power Index gives it to Oklahoma by 3.5. Jay, what a potentially, you know, closing salvo it could be for Elijah Drinkwitz at Missouri, though. We've heard his name thrown around with a lot of these big jobs, especially with Penn State, a little bit with Florida. I think for him, he at least has the excuse of, hey, Privial dislocated his ankle. We were rolling. Yeah. And, you know, if this goes off the rails, that won't reflect on me, right? Oh, the quarterback got hurt. What could we really expect him to do? All they had was a true freshman backup there in Matt Zollers, former Nebraska target, by the way. But sneaky big one for him. You know, I don't think that a loss on the road at now top 10 Oklahoma takes much shine off of him. But if he gets this win on the road, knocks Oklahoma back to the fringes of the playoff race. If Penn State hasn't made a decision yet, maybe it gets a little more interesting.
Post game gonna be off the chain. Post game gonna be off the hook with him, straight up, visor and all.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for him, and you know, there's nothing for them to lose. You know, they already got the built-in excuse, but I don't think he operates that way as far as his message to the team and upset victory. They're 22 now. You beat number 8 Oklahoma. You're thinking trying to maybe be top 16 or you know top 18.
Yeah.
Not 18. You move up 4 or 5 spots.
Yeah.
You know, you're in a good position. You can say, you know, look, this is the way that we were able to overcome a huge obstacle and keep this program up and being relevant.
In the Big 12, former conference for both of those two teams, you have BYU on the road at Cincinnati. Big 12 standings look like this, Jay. It's Texas Tech at 7-1. I believe they're on a bye this week. BYU a half game back at 6-1. Of course, their one loss to Texas Tech. Utah 5-2, Houston 5-2, Arizona State 5-2, Cincinnati 5-2. Offense has taken a bit of a step back for Cincinnati recently. Defense still hasn't been great for the Bearcats, but a home opportunity against a team in BYU that kind of feels like needs to win the Big 12 to get into the playoff, but should still garner at least some at-large consideration, especially with a road win like this late in the season.
Do you trust BYU? The way they looked offensively against Texas Tech, they look horrible.
Do you put that more on BYU or Texas Tech?
I mean, Texas Tech obviously was playing. I mean, obviously a very good team. Cincinnati slowed down a little bit. Defense is, you know, yet to be desired. But, I mean, you know, Cincinnati at home.
They've lost their last two games 75-38 combined. Yeah, gotten doubled up essentially by Utah and Arizona. I think I like BYU in this one, but again, wouldn't this be the one last gasp, maybe, from Cincy?
Yeah, well, yeah, it would be. I think I like BYU. I'm gonna give them a chance. I think they know that their back's against the wall and they want to get some get back, so they're gonna be motivated. Back to back road games, I think they're gonna be motivated. And Cincinnati, when you lose the way that they've lost, it's hard to muster up points. It'd be different if they lost in the last two games, you know, 76 as far as the points into like, you know, 64. You're like, all right, we're still putting up. We just got to tighten up a few things on defense. You're not stopping anybody on defense, and you're definitely not scoring any points. Mm-hmm. That's a hard recipe to get right in 1 week.
And then in the ACC, Jay, Pitt at Georgia Tech. Pitt wins in both. They're in the ACC title game. Georgia Tech's got to win out to get there. You also have Louisville at SMU. SMU favored Louisville has looked a little glitchy the last couple of weeks. Who do you like in Pitt, Georgia Tech, at Georgia Tech, and then Louisville at SMU?
I like Georgia Tech. I like Coach Key. I think they're with King and everybody. I think they're built to go and do what they need to do. You know, I think Pittsburgh got shellacked against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And
well, just ask Pat Narduzzi. That game didn't really matter.
It mattered because they beat they beat you up both physically and mentally.
Yeah.
And you know, you might lose twice against Notre Dame, which is obviously playing Georgia Tech, who is, you know, fashions themselves of being pretty physical themselves. And then as far as SMU Louisville, where's the game? Is it at SMU?
Yes, at SMU.
And I'm a favorite SMU. Mm-hmm. Louisville at home is pretty tough. I think they've been leaking oil. I don't know. Excuse me. I don't know if it's because of the Penn State talk or the extension or whatever. I just go back to Louisville. Like, was it last year? You just putter down the stretch.
Yeah, kind of Maryland-ish.
Right,
not quite as bad, but
yeah, but yes, like right when they's like, okay, this is it.
Yeah,
you just look like a totally different team. I'm gonna go SMU.
You also get Miami at Virginia Tech. Newly minted head coach James Franklin will not be coaching that game for Virginia Tech. Kansas State at Utah, also interesting. And then in the group of five, Tulane, freshly in the rankings, goes to Temple. You have a James Madison hosting Washington State, and then a North Texas at Rice. Let's talk some NFL, though. When we get back, Texans take down the Bills. Who do you trust in the AFC and the NFC? All that ahead here on Old School.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back into Old School. Off and rolling here halfway through the show. Coming up at 5, Jason Peter in the studio with us. Look forward to that at 5 for a full hour. This segment of the show brought to you as always by Heartland of Nebraska Windows. They are locally and family owned with their own team of installers. They offer free estimates, full window replacements, all vinyl triple pane windows, and a lifetime warranty on everything while keeping their prices affordable. You can learn more by calling 402-430-3852, or you can visit them online, Heartland of Nebraska Windows.
No one plans for hair loss. But through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
I love my morning coffee, but sometimes the crash hits harder than the caffeine. That's when I switch to Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee infused with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics, giving me smooth, focused energy that actually lasts. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Enter for a chance to win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.com.
Speaking of learning more, Jay, we learned more about the Houston Texans last night. 23-19, gritty, gritty win. Yeah. Still the number one defense in the NFL. They must have watched their Jay Foreman highlight tape to get him fired up for that one against Buffalo.
Yeah, man, it was. I mean, I knew Houston's defense was good, but last night was pretty special. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, Josh Allen trying to force it, or what Houston made him try to force some plays or try to make big plays, really played into it. I think also the lack of sticking to the running game when Cook was really cooking played into it, but it's pretty dominating. And I think that defense is actually kind of infused some energy into the offense. And so it was a big victory for them. It was a ugly loss for Buffalo. They just certainly had their choice, their chances, but they did not look good. I mean, when you have, you know, take the play on the field is one thing, but then when you have, you know, a high second round pick and Keon Coleman, you know, 2 weeks in a row, healthy scratch, that's letting you know internally there's some things going on. Because and Buffalo's a really good organization, really good coach, got actually pretty good leadership on that team. And you got a guy that you're counting on that's missing meetings late. It affects the whole team. Yeah. And you might not know it, but it actually does, because when you're out there and you're not really able to create some separation, or you don't have a guy that can make a play, you know, and a guy that has the capabilities of doing so is on the sidelines. And when you get into a pressure-packed game like that, and, you know, Houston was in full-fledged, you know, attacking, you know, the head of the snake and Josh Allen, it can be demoralizing. Now, also, I would think the frustration has to be for Buffalo and Josh Allen. You know, one thing I would say, which is really commendable, is where he was straight-up dude, shows the leadership. And they asked him about the 8 sacks, no mention of the offensive line. He's like, I got to do better, which he does. He has to get the ball out quicker. Not hold it on to it so long. He ran into a couple sacks. But also got to look at Brady, the play caller. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think James Cook, you know, he had 7 carries, like 77 yards. And then it seemed like 30 minutes went by before you started to try to run the ball again. Because when you have a defense that's pass rushing the way that they are, they were getting after your quarterback against a pretty good offensive line in Buffalo, even though Brown got hurt, who was a really good right tackle, their backup is still, you know, more than capable. You have to run the ball. You have to keep them off balance, and you play right into their hands. So it's a long mini bye week. It was a long flight to Buffalo. But in Houston, they definitely are, you know, feel like they're on the right track, and they're starting to kind of come around. They've dealt with some issues themselves where you had people question DeMeco Ryans as a coach, oddly enough, which is crazy. CJ Stroud, you know, obviously being hurt. Davis Mills, give him credit. He's came in and held the fort down, been very efficient, and the offense has been, you know, good enough for them to win.
Houston still on the outside looking in of the AFC playoff picture, but they're just a half game back of Jacksonville in the division. Right now, the most likely seed for Houston would be either the 7, the 6, or the 5 in that order. Outside chance of the division, which would get them the 3 seed. Again, just a half game back of Jacksonville. But Jay, if you look up and down this AFC playoff picture, your top 3 teams are still Denver, Indianapolis, and New England. And from the Buffalo standpoint, and I think we can even rope a team like Baltimore into this conversation as well. If you would have told people that at this point, Kansas City was going to be 5-5 in a lot of turmoil, losing one score games, you would have thought, oh man, Buffalo and Baltimore have got to be licking their chops.
Yeah.
But Buffalo's 7-4, still a good team. And I think more than any of those teams at the top in Denver, Indianapolis, and New England, at least Buffalo's been in the playoffs before, and you trust that they know what it's like to go through that grind, get to that point in the season, and you think there's still enough talent on that team. But then for the Ravens, also on the outside, looking into the playoff picture now, it just makes me wonder the conversation, the vibe in those buildings. Obviously, the season's not over. There's a long way to go. Playoffs are, you know, January and February. Sure. But this would have been a great year for Buffalo and or Baltimore to really establish themselves as, hey, we told you Kansas City wasn't that good. We told you we really were that good. They just found ways to beat us in the playoffs, but we are legitimate. Kind of a bad year for them to have a bad year. They, you know, kind of seems like maybe they've lost a little bit of that tinge of credibility.
Yeah, then they lost that edge there as well, because they would in years past grind out that game against Houston, and Houston ground them up. And so Buffalo's, you know, ascending the wrong way, Houston is
so descending
or descending, excuse me. And Houston's ascending in the right way. Mm-hmm. And then Jacksonville, you just never know week to week basis. You know, they'll have an embarrassing loss and they beat the brakes off the Chargers, I think last week. Mm-hmm. And so it's a tight race. And so Buffalo's got to get it together. In the AFC now that finally that the Chiefs have, you know, kind of came down to reality, same and Baltimore, right? Because they were the two odds on favorites to, you know, link up them in Buffalo in the AFC championship. This is a great opportunity for, you know, a Denver or an Indianapolis or in particular New England. I mean, I think Pittsburgh, their offense will probably hold them back, but it's wide open. It's wide open. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to come down to matchups and where you play teams. But ultimately, if you're able to pack your defense like Houston's able to, for the most part, Pittsburgh, and then you know, every team I'm looking at right now, besides actually maybe Buffalo, really can pack a dominating defense at times. And so when you're able to do that, you're really able to withstand some storms. Now with Kansas City, you know, this is make or break, and this is, you know, this is a byproduct of playing more football than anybody's played over the last decade, being the closest thing to New England Patriots, you know, and their magical run.
But still having a grind of a division compared to what the Patriots had most of the time.
Right, and then the division kind of flipped over the last 2 years, like overnight, right? Mm-hmm. You got bringing Sean Payton, obviously bringing Harbaugh. You got Herbert, you know, starting to take off. Bo Nix is better than probably, you know, obviously
than Russell Jarrett Stidham and Trevor Siemian.
And Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
The organization is better, you know, Denver. They mm-hmm. had a change in the hands of the ownership, more invested. And then, you know, obviously the one that you always feel like is the JV squad is the Raiders, but you can't really not take them serious because the Raiders went into Kansas City, I think, last year and beat them, right?
Was that the Christmas game?
Yeah, I think last year. No, it wasn't the Christmas game because the Christmas game was when they went to Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But yeah, they had the interception, the pick six in Mahomes. Right. Yeah.
So, and then also the Raiders have obviously Max Crosby, who's the ultimate equalizer, you know, to anybody's offense. So the AFC is a pretty interesting, you know, conference and who's going to come out of it and who's going to finish. Right now, everybody's like, you got 6-7 games left. And you can think the top two teams, Denver and New England, both are on 8-game win streaks.
Yeah.
Okay. So how long do you extend that win streak? What happens after you eventually lose one? And then how do you finish? And then when you think of like the Buffalo Bills and the Chargers, okay, you guys lost one. And then obviously Kansas City's lost two in a row. Okay. At what point in time are you guys going to get it together?
One of you has to.
Yeah. Like really together. Mm-hmm. Like start playing some football. And start beating the competition that you might have to play in the playoffs because all the teams that you're losing to now you're going to see potentially in the, you know, first, second round.
Who do you trust in the AFC?
I still trust the Chiefs. They got Mahomes and they got Andy Reid. Mm-hmm. And Jones. I trust the Chiefs.
Buffalo is sitting much prettier than they are. Do you trust Buffalo versus any of those top three right now in the playoffs just because they've been there before?
I trust Buffalo against all of them. I think Buffalo will beat New England. I trust Buffalo against Denver and Indy too, but I don't trust them where I think it's like I'm going to be sitting back here thinking like, oh, they're going to win. Like guaranteed.
Phillip Rivers was one possession away from beating Buffalo. People forget.
Yeah. So I think it's tough. I think there's a lot of parity, but you have some really good teams though too.
What about the NFC? Is the NFC any clearer in your mind? The reason I ask is because you look at Philly.
I don't trust Chicago.
No.
I don't trust Green Bay. I just don't. Right when I thought I did, I do. I just don't.
Detroit's
reeling a little bit. Mm-hmm. If there's a team that I trust this year, it's the Rams. Mm. I trust the Rams. Now Philly is still 8-2. That's ugly. You know what this year reminds me of Philly is when they start out 10-1, and then they end up losing the first round of the playoffs to Tampa.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
there's just so much going on in that building. Real or fake, contrived or legitimate? Hey, like
Austin, there's a lot going on,
dude.
Whether you got receivers having their back against, I guess, the quarterback, whether it's the quarterback kind of doing his own thing, whether it's the organization kind of still now going back and forth, whether they believe in Jalen Hurts, whether it's trying to keep Jalen Carter under control mm-hmm. and then trying to get away from the perception that all is horrible when you're 8-2 and you're the defending Super Bowl champs.
Yeah.
And then you got a coach that is kind of like okay with it.
I'm going to throw another team out there. I trust Tampa.
That was my second one.
I don't know how good they are, if they're a real player, but they at least know who they are. They at least know what they do. I know they got a bunch of receiver injuries, guys that probably won't come back or help them for the playoffs. But Tampa at least knows who it is.
I trust Tampa. And I trust Baker.
And I trust that Carolina is going to fall off at some point.
Yeah, and I trust Baker. I trust them in the playoffs. Those are probably the only two teams I really trust right now in the playoffs.
Detroit's got new coordinators going into the playoffs for the first time.
Maybe San Fran, if they're healthy.
There's the key thing. Can you trust that they'll be healthy enough to make it through? And can you trust Shanahan to get to the playoffs? Yes. In the playoffs?
I don't trust them if the game is in the fourth quarter.
That's what I'm saying. So do you trust?
He should run the ball.
If you can't trust a team in the fourth quarter, do you really trust them?
I trust the Rams right now, as it is, more than anybody in the NFC. I trust Tampa second. Everybody else, I could do without.
Who do you trust more, Sam Darnold or Daniel Jones? Seattle or Indianapolis?
Daniel Jones and them dang Colts. I do. I like Daniel Jones. I felt like he got a raw deal in New York. I felt like he always, you know, he played under circumstances pretty admirable. Yeah. Seattle's a good story. Maybe ask me that after this week. I want to see how Sam Darnold bounces back.
Seattle has the best point differential in the NFC.
I know, but did you see him?
I saw them last week.
Yeah.
Against the Rams, who are 1 point behind them in terms of point differential. Those two teams are a combined plus 201 on the year. The Seahawks have scored 22 more points than the Rams. The Rams have allowed 21 points fewer than the Seahawks. In fact, that Rams defense allowed only 172 points so far this year. Far and away, the number one defense in the NFC. Still three possessions ahead of Seattle and Green Bay in second. And then even if you look at the AFC, Kansas City's defense only allowed 181 points, Houston 182, but in one extra game. That's an incredible defense that we let off talking about there. It's so weird looking at these NFL standings right now in the playoff picture, Jay, with still six games to go, seven for some teams as well. We love that the NFL is about parity. That's why they have the first place, second place, third place, fourth place schedule, so any team can feel like they have a chance to at least get back in the race every year. But for how long we've spent talking about New England into Kansas City and then who the challengers are, have all these new names pop up and not be sure of, okay, the road to the Super Bowl doesn't necessarily feel like it goes through Philly. Even if that's where the one seed is in the NFC, does it really feel like they're the team to beat? Not really. And clearly it's not Kansas City this year. It's just a whole new conversation.
Yeah, it should be exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, right now it goes through Denver, you know, or it's going to go through
Naptown, baby.
Or Indianapolis or New England. And in the NFC, it's a lot different. Whereas, you know, you're looking at the point differential, you know, quiet is kept. Detroit's down there at number eight, and they got a nice little setup there that what they got going on. But I wouldn't say cute because I know, you know, Dan Campbell, nothing's cute. You know, I don't, you know, personally.
He throws passes to his backup tackle. That's cute. It's okay.
Yeah, but I was saying for him when he took over the play calling when they were at Washington, was a good strategic move. Last week, the offense didn't look nearly as good when he took over it. So how they get on track and how they manage that now with Morton, their OC, Dan Campbell, Jared Goff, and they have all the pieces. That's the same team. Listen, if they figure it out, now, Laporta's out for the season. But if they figure it out, Detroit's just built. They could come in the back door now.
Are they a surprise candidate to hire Ryan Day as OC in the offseason?
Ryan Day is not going to go nowhere in the NFL and be an OC. Not happening. Why would you? Like he's making what? $8, $9, $10 million?
I'm just throwing something out there.
They need to hire. It wouldn't surprise me if they hired like a college offensive coordinator as the OC.
Jared Goff kind of seems like a limiting principle. You know what he is. You got to hire someone that's comfortable with him because you're not getting rid of him.
You can. He's won too much, been too productive.
That's what I'm saying. So who in college runs something that's good for what Jared Goff wants to do? Kind of West Coast-ish.
I'm trying to think. I mean, Ryan Day does. But he's not going out there to be a coordinator.
Interesting. The plot thickens.
I think they run it back one more year with Morton.
I think they should.
Yeah.
Game of trial run. Okay.
And you got better. What this reminds me of is when Slowick was down there with Houston. And it kind of, the first year. Yeah. We'll see if you can get the reverse and Morton really and Jared Goff, takes off. It'll be interesting to see how Detroit's offense finishes the season because they can run it conventionally.
Yeah.
You can throw it. And you can do all the setup plays and all that. This is a lack of experience. You got to think Ben Johnson was a heck of a play caller, man. Yeah. And it took him a while to get to where he was. They had to build that team around him and Jared Goff and their connection. You just don't replace that or be able to replicate that in one offseason.
Yeah, not overnight.
No, you can't. And so you got to have time. And then you got Shepherd over there. That's a hot commodity as a defensive coordinator. Are you really sold on? I'm not really sold on him as a defensive coordinator.
Their defense
has been okay.
But with that talent on that side of the ball?
That's what I'm saying. Even last year with Aaron Glenn, the defense was okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, last year was the injuries. This year, they're healthy.
This year, they're healthy.
They have different reasons.
Right, and they're just okay.
Yeah.
They drafted Arnold from Alabama, and he's like, what, on, timeout?
Sitting in the corner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You brought him in to be man-to-man. Now you're mad that he gets beat with no help. I mean, it's just – so, yeah, I think they need to get back to Detroit and figure out who they are. It's kind of like what we said about Indianapolis, right?
Yeah.
They had that offseason. Everybody's patting him on the back. You were so close, so you think you arrived, and now you're down there at the AC. Now you're hanging on by a string, and you got the Carolina Panthers, coming up, biting on your heels, along with those Dallas Cowboys.
Second in that division somehow.
Yeah.
What a mess. He's Jay Foreman. I'm Austin Norman. We'll wrap up Hour 2 of Old School, get you set up to hear from Jason Peter right after this.
You're listening to Old School with Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Download the mobile app and listen wherever you are on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We are wrapping up Hour 2 of Old School. Jason Peter on his way in for Hour 3 of the show. Austin Norman and Jay Foreman with you all show long as well. 402-464-5685 if you want to be a part of the conversation. This segment is always brought to you by the good folks at Love Volleyball Nebraska. Jay, we got this from the text line, trying to make a little bit of sense of it here from Alan in Lincoln. BYU ranked number 9 right now, currently up 20 and climbing. On Wisconsin. Now 86-58 BYU over Wisconsin, essentially a home game for the Cougars. This one's being played in Salt Lake City, the home of the Utah Jazz. Is there a chance Nebraska men's basketball gets ranked with a win over Kansas State tonight?
There's a chance, especially if it's impressive.
What would you consider impressive? Double digits?
Double digits. And if they really look at it, if you can hold Haggerty under a season average.
Which is 26. 28.
Yeah, is it 26 or 28?
Last I checked this morning, it was 26. 26 might be 28 now, but.
Yeah, say you hold them in like 20. High volume 20.
Yeah.
Just locked everybody down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You went at 87 to.
Hey, listen, once they're talking about you having the nation's longest winning streak, they're trying to see what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And so if it's not this week, it's next week. But the biggest thing is when Nebraska finally gets ranked is that you validate it. We've seen that
part,
around here where you got to make sure that you validate your hype that you get.
I'm scrolling back through to try to find it. So Nebraska was not ranked the last time they made it to the tournament, never made it. So the last time they would have been ranked, it hasn't happened under Fred Hoiberg. With the way Nebraska's records looked. Was Nebraska ranked? The last time Nebraska was ranked, Jay, was the week of December 31st, 2018, right before the calendar flipped to 2019. And then Nebraska went into, let's see, where are we looking at number 24? Nebraska week of 12-31 would have been a win against Southwest Minnesota State. Nebraska went on the road and lost back-to-back games to Maryland and Iowa to fall out of the rankings yet to return.
That's that dang Iowa.
Well, Maryland first by 2 on the road, College Park.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I do remember that, yeah. The hangover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Damn Iowa City.
No kidding. But man, can you imagine telling Husker fans 7 years ago, it might take 7 years under Fred Hoiberg to get this program ranked? And even that, with the win over Kansas State is not sure.
Teams that should have been ranked, and but when you're scratching and clawing to get in the top 25, I would say I didn't envision it. But also, I think that the program is pretty stable, and Fred's doing a good job though too.
Yeah, and for Nebraska, this is a program that probably has to win one or two extra games to get ranked.
Yeah, you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt. No. Yeah,
right or wrong, just how it is.
Oh well.
Yeah. Jason Peters right behind you. Should we bring him in?
Yeah. We'll go ahead. Take a quick break. We'll come back. Austin Orman, Jay Foreman, Old School with JP in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll be right back.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.